Good morning, everybody. So this month, we're going to be working through Galatians, and I would love it if everybody could read the book, read it quickly, read it slowly, read it in small groups, read it in pairs. Just let's let God speak to us as a church through this wonderful book. So does everybody know what their homework is? Good. Read Galatians. Okay, so firstly, Galatians, it was Paul's first letter. It was written in AD 49, which is actually 2 years after he first visited the region of Galatia, which is basically south central Turkey. It is a book full of passion, of energy, of rawness, of issues. There is a genuine sense within the book of kind of expectation that God is on the move and we are, as a kind of community, wrestling with stuff. Hands up if you are ordinary. Well, we're all kind of extraordinary. And we're all ordinary. If you're just a regular Joe like me, this book is for you. You know, the letter, well, it's not a book, it's a letter. It's not written for the religious academic elite. It was just for normal people who were just trying to figure out what it means to believe in this Jesus guy who they considered king of another kingdom. And they would just pass it around. They would copy it. They would read it out. They would discuss it. It was just a letter that Paul wrote just for ordinary folk like me and you. Segregated item. If you were in South Africa in the time of kind of the apartheid, you would just have a culture where black and white is separated, and some people would struggle with that and some people would agree with that, but it was something ingrained within the culture, within the values. It just kind of bled through society. You know, this bathroom is for blacks, this bathroom is for whites, this drinking fountain is for blacks, this drinking fountain is for whites. You go to a swimming pool, I can't go in that one, that's a whites only swimming pool. I go to this barber's, I can't go in that barber's, that's a blacks only barber's. It was just segregation, it was just part of the culture. If I go into South Africa and I go into that community and I, Dave, who nobody knows, it's a random person, I have a vision, and I have a vision for a community centre which is not segregated, where black and white and all human beings can come together and eat together and share the same bathrooms and just be one shared humanity. I come into the community, and a few people begin to get the vision, and they want to get on board with me and say, yeah, I agree with that. I'm going to help you build this thing. And so I start laying some foundations, and I've laid the foundations, and we're all kind of ready for this thing to be built. And just before I get on with building it, or maybe it's just started building it, I then get called off to other business elsewhere. I then kind of hear, while I'm off on business, that actually people have been talking and they've been going, you know, what authority did that Dave guy have to have this vision? This is just the way we do society. This is our culture. Maybe like we should have a community centre, but actually maybe the toilets, we should keep them segregated. And maybe the eating area, we should have two tables, a tables for blacks and a tables for whites. And basically I find out that people, number one, question the authority on which I was basing my very vision for the shared community, and number two, they'd actually caved in to some of the cultural pressures. Some of the people with the loudest voices, they'd caved to those voices, and they were no longer building my vision. They were building something different, something wasn't actually what I had a vision for. This is basically what Paul has found himself, the situation that Paul has found himself in with the Galatian church. Did I mention that Galatia was south central Turkey? Okay. So in the region of Galatia, there were three groups. There was a small Jewish community. There was a pagan community with all the temple worship and idolatry that went with that. And there was a cult which worshipped the emperor at the time. Now, along comes Paul, an odd little Jew, with a new message. And that message is of there is one creator God. So pagans will have an issue with that. And but the Jews will be fine with that. And that one creator God has sent the Messiah, the Jewish Messiah has come, and he's come in the person of Jesus, who was crucified and then raised from the dead. And he was established, he is now established as the king of a superior kingdom. So the cult will have an issue with that. And he's making a way for humanity to know God as Father, for us to become one global family. Now, the Jews will have a huge issue with this, and he's building a new temple. It's not a temple which you go to, it's a temple where each brick is a person. And we, as River, have said for years, we don't go to church, we are the church. He's building a new temple. So Paul goes, he casts this vision to this community in south central Turkey, where there's these different groups, and out of the group, in the community, some of them believe. So some of the Jews believe, and some of the other guys believe. And so he then starts kind of building this thing. It's the church. It's this one, we're one. We can know God as Father together. We're the temple of the Holy Spirit. You know, he's empowering us to go and change the world. Paul then leaves, and he finds out that the gospel that he was preaching has been watered down. The gospel of one family in Christ had been watered down. Because what was happening was the Jews would believe in Jesus as the Messiah, but then they were refusing to eat with the Gentiles. Who you eat with sends a statement. We don't really get it in our culture today. We'll just sit down at like Cooper's or whatever, and they'll be like, just anyone can sit down at the table. But actually, even in other cultures around the world today, who you will eat with, it sends a statement about identity. And back then, it was really, really like kind of an issue. And Peter and some of the other apostles caved to this. They were saying, we can be Jews. We as Jews, we believe that Jesus is the Messiah, but we do not, we won't eat with the Gentiles. And so Paul, as you read Galatians 1 and 2, you'll find that a big part of Paul's argument is saying, you have forsaken the true gospel here. You've missed something, guys. I've cast this vision for this kind of oneness, and you're going away from that, and that's really, really bad. And it's all mixed up with things which I personally find really hard to get my brain around. But basically, the Jews have an issue. They're kind of like, do we still keep the Mosaic law? We're Jews, but we now believe that Jesus is the Messiah. Should we still, what does that mean for our culture, for our heritage, for the laws? And Paul is basically saying, like, yes and no to the Jews. Yes, you keep some of the stuff because it's about your culture, it's about your identity, like God is in some of that stuff. But also, no, you don't want to keep all of it, because actually you can know, you can be right with God through faith in Jesus, and you don't need to keep all the laws and keep all of that kind of stuff. He says, cursed are you who think you can keep the law and make yourself right with God. It's not like cursed are you, it's like actually, it would like do your absolute nothing if you think you can make yourself right with God just by keeping loads of laws. It's just damaging for anyone's mental health. You come under a curse. So you've got this issue, it's like yes and no for the Jews. But then what does that mean for the Gentiles? What about issues of circumcision and all that kind of stuff? And if we're one, then what does that mean for us? What does that mean for them? And they're wrestling with all of this stuff. And you've got kind of these arguments, which are in the book of Galatians and some of the other books, which Paul is trying to wrestle with. So as you read it in your alone time, just think these are some of the things which are going on. Within the context of that, they're also challenging Paul's authority. Paul comes along and he casts his vision. He says, from my perspective, guys, this is what the gospel is. And they're saying, well, what right does this guy to have, to say this anyway? Who is he? He wasn't even with Jesus. He didn't walk with Jesus. He wasn't one of Jesus's brothers. Why should we listen to him? Especially if Peter and all the proper apostles, especially if they're all thinking that it's okay to to be a Jewish, you know, a Messianic Jew, but not eat with the Gentiles. And so Paul, in Galatians 1 and 2, he's actually, like, he's making a case for his authority. And essentially he's saying, my authority comes from Christ himself. You know, God has revealed Christ to me. He's revealed Christ in me. But also, I haven't just gone and acted independently, you know, just on my own, on my lonesome, going, Jesus showed me, that's it, that's my authority. Actually, he's worked relationally, which is really, really important for all of us. He's gone to Peter and to the other apostles, and he's checked out, you know, guys, this is what I'm thinking, this is what God showed me, what do you think? And they've kind of said, yeah, we agree with that. That kind of connects with us. So he kind of builds a case for his authority being one of from heaven, but also one of you know, relationally. Whew. So that's a bit of the context of what's going on. Some of the points which speak to me are, who knows what film this is from? Does anyone notice it? Hands up, shout out. Yes, that's right. It's the greatest film ever made, Hook. Bangarang! Glorious film. If you haven't seen it, that's your other homework. Watch the film Hook. It's glorious. Galatians 2 verse 6, God shows no partiality. Galatians 2:20, I have been co-crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself up for me. The point that I was just making, Paul's vision for one humanity, all-knowing as Father, is reinforced here. Number one, God shows no partiality. And number two is, it's kind of this you'll see at the end of chapter 2, this verse of, I have been co-crucified with Christ, is like really, really hard to get your head around, especially for us as kind of modern men and women. But back then, in the Jewish mindset, in the Hebrew mindset, there would be an idea which Paul's kind of getting onto, and he unpacks it in some of the other books, of actually this idea of association. So you get that with the story of David and Goliath. So David is basically saying, you know, if I win this battle, we all win. If I lose this battle, we all lose. And that idea of, we are associated. Christ has been crucified. He's died and he is raised. Actually, that's something which we can mystically somehow, you know, all kind of participate in, and we can all kind of associate ourselves in. And that basically is like the most beautiful thing. But what it means is, we all eat at one table. We all feast at one table. And a few weeks ago, Al Bullen, he brilliantly said, look, we're all part of the same vineyard, whether we like it or not. So I think about, you know, other kind of Christian brothers and sisters who are kind of like, maybe wish like we weren't at the same table. I'd rather sit at a different table. But whether we like it or not, together as brothers and sisters, we have all been crucified, died, and raised with Christ. We're all in the same family. We all eat from the same table. And that's what we're going to be doing today. We're going to take communion in the second half of the meeting. And that's what we're going to remember. As we take communion, we're just going to remember, actually, we are one. We're part of one global family. We're part of one River Church. We're part of one church in Marlow. I think when Paul wrote the book of Galatians, he wouldn't have written it to River Church in Marlow. He would have written it to the church is in Marlow. We all eat from the same table. Are we listening? That was the second kind of point which kind of spoke to me when I was reading Galatians 1 and 2. Galatians 1 verse 8, it's just like this throwaway comment. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you on a contrary gospel, he is to be accursed. And it's like, okay, cool. And then you stop and you read it and you think, what? Even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you. And you think, well, an angel from heaven has never like preached to me. It's just like this throwaway statement. You know, if just an angel preaches to you or me preaches to you, that's crazy. Like, that's one of the things which I love about the Bible and the New Testament, is it's constantly like challenging your expectation of like what normal is. It kind of challenges me every time I read it to kind of go up a level, go up again, just challenges just my normal thinking. I said before, kind of, there are some of us who are more practically minded within our church. There are some of us who are more mystically minded. I kind of gave the illustration once about a plane coming into land, and you either can see the red lights or you can see the white lights, and if you can only see the white lights, you know you're coming in too low, and if you can only see the red lights, you know you're coming in too high, and if you can see a bit of both, then you kind of think, yeah, I'm coming into land. And sometimes it's like that with the challenge in the church. We have the more mystically minded people, the heavenly minded people, we have the practically minded people. And, you know, there's sometimes a kind of a tension there, but actually we need one another. We need both. And there is a challenge here to me to acknowledge and to be and to think, come on, Dave, you need to be more heavenly minded. I have in my day-to-day life very, very little awareness of the angelic. I don't have an expectation to see angels or to hear preaching, you know, from angels, but Paul seems to have, and it's in the New Testament, shed loads, an awareness of the angelic. And so I want to say, if you're one of the more mystically minded people in our church, then guys, we need you. And just go for it. Pursue your gifts. Pursue seeing in the spirit. Pursue, like, just trying to connect with heaven. Pursue, you know, dreams and visions and all that kind of stuff. As part of who we are as the church, you know, we are a church that kind of celebrates the supernatural and takes risks and goes for things with the spirit. And we need that. I kind of, verse 1:15, I've kind of just taken a few little bits out of it, because just to kind of make the point, when God was pleased to reveal his son in me, I did not immediately consult with flesh and blood, but I went away to Arabia. God was pleased to reveal Christ to Paul. God was pleased to reveal Christ to Paul. And God is pleased to reveal Christ to all of us. You know, I shared a few weeks ago about my personal journey that I've been on the last year, of going from a year ago to being like nowhere in my faith, almost resigning and just feeling like I didn't know where God was. I was completely bored and felt like I had like spiritual repetitive strain injury, like within my faith. And, you know, through kind of the help of a spiritual director and working through the exercise of St. Ignatius, I've had Christ revealed to me again. God has revealed Christ to me, and it's been the most beautiful thing. I've learned how to re-engage with the spiritual discipline of just daily quiet times and have daily bread given to me as God has spoken to me and met me the majority of the time. It's been a learning process. But God revealed himself to Paul. And what did he do? He must have been freaked out, he must have been disorientated, and he went away to Arabia, which is Syria. No, it wasn't. It was Sinai. And he went into that secret place, that quiet place where just no one was there, and he just wrestled with stuff, and he was taught by God. And I want to kind of encourage you, inspire you, challenge you to listen. If you've stopped listening and you just got caught up with the busyness of life and Facebook and YouTube and Twitter and just life is so busy, let's not miss out on actually drawing away and finding space to go away to our own little mini Sinai's, our own little mini Arabias, and listen, because God, he wants to reveal Jesus to us. And if you need like help with that, if you want to talk it through, I want to say again, I am here, and if I can help, you know, I will. Because sometimes it's helpful just to have another set of ears, or another set of ears, trying to listen out for that still small voice. Chapter 1, verse 16. God has set me apart from my mother's womb. God has set me apart from my mother's womb. There's this kind of idea of calling in here, like Paul being called by God, Jesus was revealed in him, but actually Paul was recognizing that there was something deeper going on, that actually God had set him apart from his mother's womb. The calling of God was associated, like, and totally connected with just who God had made him to be. Paul was like, he was always a religious nut. He was like a religious zealot before he came to know Christ. He was a religious zealot after he came to know Christ. It was just who God had made him to be. And we can easily wrestle with, like, God, what are you calling me to do? And I just want to say it again. I was wrestling, you know, for the last 5 years with, am I called? What's my calling? I was waiting for this kind of like letter from heaven to appear, until I realized one day that calling is who God's made me to be. So I began to write down, what do I like? What do I dislike? What are the things which I've been exposed to, like sovereignly, which have just, influenced my ideas and my thinking? What do I get passionate about? What am I good at? Like, and you map those out, and that's the answer. You're called to be you. And you're called to give your time to the things which expresses your you-ness. Be yourself. Everyone else has taken. The last thing which I personally took heart from was the fact that Paul, he met Christ in AD 33, and he went on his first missionary journey in AD 47. So what's the time difference? Is anyone good at maths? 14 years between meeting Christ and before going on his first journey. What do you think happened in those 14 years? Question. Learning. Resistance. Fellowship. Just can you go a bit louder? Discipleship. Becoming. Setbacks. Must have been hugely frustrating. Personally, when I know that God's kind of said something to me and then I'm not actually doing it, it's like really frustrating. But you see that pattern again and again in the Bible, like God calling people to do it, whether it's David or Joseph. There's a call that happens, an encounter which happens, and then years and years and years later, they actually start walking in the thing. And it's like that in-between process is actually really, really important. It's kind of a place of just of learning to rely on God, to character formation, skills formation, becoming competent, becoming honing your gifts. So I just want to say, if you are in that place where you feel like, actually, God's made me to do something. I know what I'm called to be. I know who I'm called to be. But actually, I'm in Arabia at the moment, and I don't know how this is going to work out. Take heart. Take heart this morning, because you're not alone. God's with you. And let this be a time of character formation, of growing in your gifts and your, knowledge of God and trusting God and all of those kind of things. That's the end.